Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
What's going on, everyone? Thanks so much for checking out my conversation here with Zaire Franklin, strong side linebacker for the Indianapolis Colts. Truly one of the best players that nobody really talks much about. He ranked fourth in the entire NFL last season in tackles. But not only that, he made a lot of plays, sacks, TFLs, forced fumbles. I guess that's what happens when your team goes 4-12-1. But as Indianapolis tries to turn this thing around with a new coach, a new quarterback, new direction, they'll be leaning on guys like Zaire Franklin, and holy heck, has he been through a lot. You can catch the full Q&A over at golongtd.com if you prefer the written word, and if you prefer the podcast right here. Here's Zaire himself getting into his relationship with his mom, his grandmother, both of which he lost in 2013 before he even played a down at Syracuse. And then he won all of 12 games in four seasons as a starter at Syracuse and went through a lot last year with the Colts, his fifth season last year. So he's going on to year six and was extended last offseason. So he's a big part of what they're trying to build in Indianapolis. Thank you so much for listening, sharing the podcast with a friend. That's how we keep this thing growing. And, of course, subscribing at golongtd.com. If you'd like to upgrade to a VIP membership, we've got Jamal Lewis, the Baltimore Ravens legend, tonight, Friday, 6 p.m. on the call. So grab your favorite beer, get the Zoom link, and hang out with us if you'd like. And when you become a VIP, you get full Zoom happy hour access with players from across the NFL, a sleek black Go Long hoodie. I'm wearing it right now. I think you'll really enjoy it. And, of course, a signed copy of The Blood and Guts, How Tight Ends Save Football. So you can get that link right here in the description wherever you're listening to the podcast. Thank you so much, and we'll catch you next time. So Z, Zaire, is there another nickname we should call you? How do you want to go?
You call me Zaire, Z4. That's what people call me in college. My family calls me Ziggy. That's like a nickname, Ziggy. That's why they be like, get Ziggy with it. That's like my Twitter name. So, but I just go by Zaire, to be honest with you.
Ziggy's pretty solid, though. I like Ziggy. Yeah. Imagine you can go by Ziggy at any age too, right? I'm picturing you like as a 67-year-old. I guess you can't call somebody Ziggy as they get to that age.
That's kind Zig. Of my thing. That was like a childhood thing. Like I don't pee in the bed anymore, so I don't know if I should be able to call Ziggy. So it's all good.
Well, you're a Syracuse kid, so we know that you come from a good place. We were just kind of talking about a few minutes ago, but where does it start for you? Probably back in Philly, right? I know a little bit about your story. It's really inspiring. Your mother, your grandmother, really raised you and taught you so much. The Players Tribune piece that you did was incredible. Kind of start wherever you want, but like when you kind of figure out how you got to this point as one of the NFL's best defensive players, really hands down, where does it start?
Honestly, yeah, it starts for me, you know, North Philly. just raised by a group of strong women who just kind of always had a goal and a plan for me. And as they moved on and I had to grow up basically on my own since I was 16, just constantly trying to make them proud, from Philly to Syracuse, and now to Indy. So really just, I guess your prototype, not your prototypical, because I feel like I definitely went through some different hurdles, but I guess all you can say is the underdog story that stayed down till they came up, really.
What did you really go through then at a young age? Obviously, losing both of your loved ones, we'll get to that. I can't imagine. But up through your, elementary years, middle school years, what was your upbringing really like?
I was different, I would say. I lost my mother when I was 16, but
16.
she had reoccurring brain tumors since I was in fifth grade. So her kind of being sick and me having to take care of her was kind of something that was consistent throughout my childhood. Just kind of me helping out with her, and then really my grandmother raised me. That's who really was a person I like leaned on and kind of taught me, pretty much everything. And kind of losing both of them, within 2 months of each other, really just kind of shaped me to who I was. Just it forced me to grow up. I think I had to grow up a lot earlier. And which is why I always feel like I'm more mature than my years, and to me, I think it just kind of set the stage for a lot of different, attributes and characteristics that I end up having, that'll help end up helping me in my career.
I didn't realize that the brain tumors were kind of on and off. So you're talking like your fifth grade through what, 11th grade when she passed?
So 10th grade, she passed like
10th grade.
February of my 10th. Oh, well, yeah, when I got my first offer, February of my junior year. Yeah, that was right after my junior, so my 11th grade. So yeah, it was a crazy situation, and then after the first time she had it, the first surgery that they did, they like made a mistake and like cut something that they weren't supposed to. So she was like disabled afterwards. She couldn't really take care of herself.
Oh,
Pretty much changed her entire personality from there. But obviously she
like
still was
cut
my.
her brain, like part of her brain, even.
Yeah, I guess that's part of something that they were trying to clip out. I think they might have made some type of, I don't know, mistake or something like that. And yeah, just kind of really altered a lot of things that, who she was.
That's brutal. I mean, yeah, because it's cognitive, I'd imagine. I mean, it's who you are. How did that affect you at a really delicate age?
Well, I just think for me, it's just, obviously it's always hard when you're seeing your parents go through something so tough. It's your mom, she's the one that they always, you run to, that, that's supposed to be your protector. And now here you are kind of protecting her, looking after her. And that's kind of really, it kind of just kind of set the stage, I guess, just for my relationship and my understanding of being selfless, kind of serving somebody else. And the whole time, she still was my mom. She still was getting on me about homework, getting on me when I messed up in school, still, coming to my games when she could and still supporting me as much as she could. But it was just that dynamic. And I think, every time I tell somebody like, yeah, my mom passed when I was 11th grade, it's always like, oh, I'm sorry to hear that. But I think for me personally, it's really one of those situations where it's like I was watching my mom in pain for, a number of years. And as anyone who's ever had to take care of a sick loved one or someone who was like kind of going through something similar, they'll tell you that, like, as much as you want them to be there for you, as much as you want them to be able to see the highs and lows of your life and enjoy these things, like, now I have a son and I would love for her to meet her grandson. Like, there's things that I wish I could be around, but I'm happy that once she passed, I was just happy that she wasn't in pain anymore. Happy that the struggle and the fight that she was going through every day just to put her shoes on, just to, get up out of bed and kind of take care of herself, that struggle wasn't there anymore. And sometimes I feel like it's just almost a relief, just knowing that, you watch someone struggle and fight through, and it really teaches you what strength really means. We in sports, I think we just, we personify guys, playing through injuries and, being tough and stuff like that. But I think it's when you get put in those real world situations and you're able to see someone that you love and someone you care about go through those type of scenarios, I think it just puts a whole lot of things in perspective. And I really think what I went through as a kid just really just gave me perspective on life. And that perspective, I think it, to me, has always been an advantage because I was always able to understand things that a lot of people wasn't.
So perfectly said. So what was she really struggling with? Was it like maybe like memory, communicating? You said that you could talk to her and she could watch your games.
Yeah, it was really more so, you know, just like, you know, she was an extreme diabetic afterwards. Just a number of like health problems and stuff going on with her diet. You also got to understand that, like, you know, I grew up on welfare. Like, you get what I'm saying? We didn't have much. So it's like, I have the best health care in the world right now in the NFL. Like, if my kid needs something, or we need to go get something, we get whatever we need. I didn't grow up like that, you know, and we're in the neighborhood that I grew up in wasn't like that. And when you grow up in neighborhoods like that, the food that you're available to you, there is no organic. I didn't know what organic was until I got to the NFL. You know what I mean? It's different things like that. So it's just, she's struggling. She's going through things. And maybe if we were better off financially, maybe if we were in a better situation, things may could have been different, but we had to make do with what we had. So that was just kind of what was going on.
But mentally, was she okay?
She was. I mean, it would be some memory loss. You know, it was just a bunch of different, like a myriad of like health issues that kind of consistent.
But you're helping with everything, like day to day life.
With my grandmother as well. Yeah.
And that's just in terms of, I think you said getting shoes on in the morning, helping get dressed, helping to get around the house, cook. Like what stuff are you even? I mean, this is a life that not many, you know, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth graders are living, and you are.
My grandmother did. Like I said, my grandmother was there. She showed it a lot of the love, but I think, you know, that was a lot on her as well. You know, her and my mother had like a really close relationship. So I know that was extremely tough for her to be able to watch, you know, her youngest daughter kind of go through that. But like I said, we were there and we were supporting her together, you know, and we obviously have family support and people were around. So it wasn't just a me thing, but, and I would never even take that. But as far as, you know, like I said, it was tough just kind of dealing with that and just watching your mom kind of go through that. So.
And in the neighborhood, what was your neighborhood like? In North Philly?
Yeah, North Philly. I moved uptown, which is my area, West Oak Lane, once I got to about fifth grade. But, you know, I think the way Philly neighborhoods are set up is different. You know, I think whereas though most cities that I've gone and traveled to, it's like you got – like Chicago, for example, like, you know, everybody knows on the south side of Chicago, don't go to this part of their city. The way Philly is set up, for the most part, it's like every neighborhood has trouble, but some neighborhoods have varying degrees of trouble. Like, you know, there's going to be trouble wherever you go, but some places you're more likely to find trouble. So I would just say, you know, where I grew up, you know, it wasn't the worst, but, you know, there were issues, there was stuff going on, but my grandmother used to always tell me, she used to say, you gonna go to college or else. Like, you know, she used to tell me that since I was a little kid, like going to college and getting my college degree was always super important to her. And I think that's why it was just so important for me to get my degree and finish my degree at Syracuse.
And it sounds like your mom and your grandmother both kind of instilled different qualities in you. Like your grandma was maybe a little more like hard-nosed, get into football, take people out. And the mom, maybe some more delicacies and sensitivities there. What did you pick up from both of them?
I think you kind of hit it, you know, a little bit. You know, my grandmother, my grandmother was crazy, man. She used to sit on the sideline and yell, "Zaire, be a hitter, not a looker." Like, she used to just yell it. Like, everybody knew her. Everybody loved her on the sidelines. Like, I wish she'd come to our games today. Oh my God, it would be so lit. But yeah, she was that energy. She was that fire. She gave me that passion and that love and that hunger. And I just think my mom, man, she just, I think she just always really believed in me. And I think, you know, she used to tell my aunt, you know, her sister, he's going to be a star. He's going to be special. Like, she used to always speak that over me. And, you know, I think for her, she always just wanted to push me past, you know, whatever I could see in the moment. push me past just being just an athlete, push me past, you know, just doing good enough. You know, she used to, you know, make me, you know, try to expand my book. It used to make me, you going to sit down, you go read the newspaper and bring me back four words that you don't understand. Like,
really?
You know what I mean? And I'm taking the sports section. You can't read the sports section. You got to go read about real estate. You know what I mean? Or something like that. So it was just like, she was just that dreamer that I feel like I needed. And I think, you know, just the balance of both of them just kind of added to who I am.
I was going to say, I wrote for the Philly Daily News a little bit in 2010. Maybe you were picking up some old stories and they weren't any good. But
he was all over.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I lived in Philly just for a few months after I graduated Syracuse, interned there, then I went down to Fayetteville, North Carolina. But yeah, I was living by like Penn, which was a super nice area. So I didn't get like,
I love the real... that area. Manny Young, that's a great area. I love Manny Young. Fantastic.
Exactly. It was,
Philly's
it was
got some
really
good
nice.
Pockets.
I liked it. What's that?
So Philly's got some great pockets now.
And you know what? Like, I know the fans have a bad rap. And, you know, as a Buffalo Sabres fan growing up and seeing Philadelphia Flyer fans, those playoff games, I'm like, oh, look at all these assholes. Like, screw them. They're just what everybody says. When I lived there, like, they were great. They were, you can see the passion. You could feel it. It really is as authentic as it gets. I'd take that over these like contrived markets, like a Los Angeles where, you know,
bro, listen,
are there really Charger and Ram fans? I'm not so sure about that.
Bro, I tell people all the time, bro. And my teammates look at me crazy. Like, they look at me like I'm wild, but it's just like growing up in Philly, it gave me a certain appreciation for passion as a fan, like I want fans to be just as bought in, like, you know what I mean? And it makes the game fun. It makes the city fun because y'all ride it together. Y'all ride the highs and lows together. And I know, you know, from Buffalo fans, man, Buffalo's got some wild, passionate fans too. So it's like when those fans love you, when they really care, it just means so much more. It's so funny. We were playing the Giants this past season, and we're pulling in, and a little six-year-old girl sees our bus fly driving by and flips us the middle finger. And I turn around and look at her like, y'all see that? Like, that's a real fan right there. Like, that little girl is really a fan.
Is she by herself, or mom and dad telling her to do it?
My mom and dad was right there, and they were encouraging. I was like, see, that makes me feel at home. Like, I felt at home at that point. Like, I was like, oh, yeah, I could play here. Like, you know what I mean? I just, that's the type of energy that you want from me personally.
I mean, and you guys almost took him down. That was at home this past year, right? Like, it was close. But...
Giants got after us, but that
oh,
was...
Oh, Giants. Was... I'm thinking of Philly, yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, we should have... Yeah, that Eagles game was crazy. Yeah, that Eagles game was crazy. Last second touchdown by Jalen, but yeah.
Yeah. Man, you're right. It is. It's different there. And so you probably grew up on Brian Dawkins and, like,
Brian Dawkins, Jeremiah Trotter. Sheldon Brand. Lito Shepherd, like those was the guys, you know what I mean? McNabb, obviously, Westbrook, you know what I mean? Trey Turner, those were some legends right there. What's my man, John Runyon? I actually played against John Runyon's son in college. He's in the league now, I think. High school. He played for the Packers, I believe.
I mean, I kind of grew up a Packer fan, so you guys tore my heart out on 4th and 26 once upon a time.
With Freddie Mitchell, yes, sir.
Red X. He did the belt before Aaron even thought about it.
Yeah, I promise you.
Man, so, God, how did you become like a legit, bona fide football prospect? I think, like, way back then, your mom kind of got you into karate, maybe, and then so you got grandma teaching you how to hit. Like, when did you become this? You know, this mean machine in the middle of a defense and realize this is something I can do for a life.
So I think for me, it was just, you know, I always was good. You know, I think I always had like a natural act for, like, you know, with it, the basics that it took to be great at the game. I think for me, I think the biggest moment I could think of my football career was I was in 7th grade. And I played pound ball when I was in Little League, pound ball, Pop Warner, got a weigh in. And every year I was always overweight for like the first couple games. Like, it was always hard for me to weigh in at a certain amount. And honestly, when I was in 7th grade, I was tired of it. I was tired of trying to lose weight. I was tired of dieting. I still hate dieting to this day, but you know, I was tired of not eating school lunch. I had to bring my own lunch and eat whatever it was and drink my own drinks. And I was tired of it. And I told my grandmother I wanted to quit football. And she said, okay. She let me stay home for a day. I didn't go to practice. I went in the kitchen and ate like 3 honey buns because I just couldn't wait to eat what I wanted to eat. That was like my rebellion. And then the next day, she was like, all right, if you want to quit, I'll let you quit. But you got to go and tell every single coach that you're quitting, that you played for, that you're quitting, and why you're quitting. And I didn't even make it past the first coach. And, you know, it's crazy because, you know, I think just that moment first has just taught me so many things just about how to really see something through. Now I feel like I can't quit anything. And it just taught me about what it really took, like dedication, you know, and just kind of really just pushing through things that was hard. And even if something ain't going the way you wanted to go, just kind of pushing through and seeing a vision. And, you know, that ended up not even being the best year, one of my favorite years of football. Like, I wouldn't even say that was like one of those type of situations. Like, oh, I came back and, you know, we won a championship and I was MVP and that changed everything. Like, it wasn't, but I just think it was just that small lesson that just taught me, like, no, keep going. And, you know, just through all the highs and lows that I had from college to the league, I always felt like I could lean on that moment right there and just think, like, yeah, that was something that really, like, helped change my life.
So why couldn't you get through that first conversation? It was just, did the coach, like, talk you out of it, or was it just hard enough for you to verbalize and to, like, quit after talking?
You get embarrassed. Like, you know, I think the thing about a lot of people is, you know, so – the biggest thing is, you know, I read a lot of books, especially about like leadership and stuff like that. And, you know, they always reference in the military and, you know, when they come to the Marines and it's the SEALs training, they always got that bell, right, when they're training on the beach. And, you know, I think a part of it is, you know, when you are going to quit something, the accountability that you're quitting on the guys that you were going through it with. You know what I mean? Like, you got to go ring that bell in front of everybody else. So that like weighs heavier on you. And I think, you know, for a lot of guys, like, especially now with the transfer portals and all kind of nonsense going on, it's so easy for guys to change sides and switch teams and to not work through things. That's tough. And a lot of times you're not even, you know, they're not taught to have a conversation about, you know, what's actually going on or talk directly to what's going on. You know, I talk to college coaches and they'll tell me kids are transferring the transfer portal about not playing and they never even came to talk to them about it. And it's just like, well, like, and as adults, you just kind of like, that doesn't really make sense, but that's just kind of where the new generation has been headed. And I just, you know, for me, that was just something that was instilled in me early. And I just think it was just that level of accountability, you know, like if you want to quit, if you don't want to do this no more, then go be a man to tell the people that you know, that you gave your word to and you committed to, that you're not going to want to do it anymore. And, you know, not to say that if you have a justified reason, you can't stop. But, you know, for me, I think that weeds out a lot of the bullshit, to be, you know, lack of a better word.
So you're going right up to him. Is this like at practice in an office? Like, what's that interaction like?
This is a bunch of people running around practicing. It's a whole thing. And they just like, what, man? Come on, Zaire, man. We ain't doing this. Whoop, whoop. And but they understood, though, you know. And I think it was like, I think for me, you know, just having, you know, and the coaches have always played a huge role in my life. But just, you know, just having those male figures kind of just talk you through those type of situations too is always helpful.
Yeah. But you like literally, like you're talking and it's hitting you like, I'm not quitting. I'm going to keep playing. Like the shame kicks in at that point.
Well, you just couldn't really get through the conversation. It was just like, all right, yeah. Next thing I know, I was at practice.
You're right, though. There's such a value in just going through hard times. And this tight end book behind me, like Tony Gonzalez, guy, he went through it again. He's got kids now, and he just keeps saying, I know that they can get whatever they want, whenever they want it, but they need to go through some shit. Like, just to grow as a human being, you need to go through hard times. And maybe, you know, you want to, he'd like, for them to avoid the traumatic stuff he went through. Like, you wouldn't want your son going through things that you went through, but you don't want to be a snowplow parent and just remove all obstacles, because what does that do for you? What does that do for your soul? Like, in life, there's hard times are inevitable. So you might as well go through them at a young age, and Lord knows you have.
And I ain't going to lie, just really to me, and even now as a man and, you know, as a man of faith, I just feel like it's just, I've come to the point where I've come to appreciate hard times. I've come to appreciate adversity because, you know, it makes you stronger. I don't remember the exact quote or the exact verse. I'm not one of those type guys, but in the Bible, there's a verse or excerpt somewhere in there. And it basically says when adversity comes, they thank God because they know that he's basically taking weaknesses from them and training them and sharpening them for a stronger battle that's to come in the future. And that's really how I feel. You know, when I was in Syracuse, we won, I think, a total of 12 games my entire career. I started for 4 years. I think we won a total of 12 games over 4 years. It was tough. You know, I remember one time my sophomore year, we started off 3-0 and then lost 9 straight. It was ridiculous. But I learned a lot about myself. I learned a lot about leadership. I learned about what it meant to be a good teammate. I learned a lot about how people respond in those type of situations. And, you know, no, I don't want to go through that. No, I wouldn't wish that on anybody. But to be honest, that prepared me for the trials that we went through this year, you know, losing a coach. You know, kind of going through that type of adversity now is different in the league because money's involved, jobs is a little different. But going through those type of experiences helped make me stronger to moving forward. And I think, honestly, I tell people all the time, I think I learned the most about leadership at Syracuse because we were going through hard times.
Man, how brutal was that? I mean, going there, I can remember some of those games, and this is – you know, the end of the Greg Robinson era and even the start of the Doug Marrone era, there was, you know, a little bit of a jolt, but still you'd look in that crowd and there weren't many people up in those stands. Like if you're a student and you're not a freshman, you're probably not going to a Syracuse football game and you're losing and things are going south and God, you're just trying to find a reason to get up in the morning and lift weights. I mean, how brutal is it for people who don't understand? Like this is, you're at a big time school, big time program. You're not winning. Very few people are even caring yet. You've got to punch in, punch out, do all that.
For me, well, for one, I wasn't with Greg Robinson. We were with Schaefer, and I had Dino, who's there now. So it was a little different. But what I would say is, for me, and even like this year, for example, you know, at certain points where we're playing and we're out of playoff contention, you know, we got interim head coach. You know, everybody's kind of playing for the next year, playing for the jobs next year. I just resigned, so I know I'm probably going to be okay. It's just, you know, it's a lot. Like, what are you playing for? What's getting you excited? Like, I love to compete. I love the opportunity. Like, that's me, though. Like, I love, like, for me, I love going to work. I love what I do. I love the game. So, for me, like, yes, it's hard. And, you know, different things bring different, you know, energies to you. Like, it's tough being in a building. It's tough dealing with, you know, the politics and the different things that kind of come along with when you kind of going through a downturn as a program or as an organization. But for me, you know, I just like, it ain't much, you know, you tell me we're going to get to play against first rounders. I'm going to go play. You know what I'm saying? You get to tell me I get to go compete against, you know, Dalvin or Justin Herbert or, you know, any of these other great players. For me, that's just a chance for me to measure myself against the league's best, and that's just another opportunity for me to prove who I am, you know. And even in college, I felt the same way. You know, in my division, we had Lamar Jackson in Louisville, we had D.Y. at Clemson, we had Florida State was just coming off their run. They still had Derwin and those guys, so like it was superstars abound, yeah. You know. And I prided myself on every time I played, I wanted to be the best guy on the field. So that's just what I was always aiming for.
And you did. I mean, within Syracuse football, I mean, you turned yourself into an NFL prospect. What was the turning point there? Like, how do you think you got on the map and ended up getting drafted and put yourself in this position?
Well,
a moment?
All right. Well, I say the play that I felt like I really could play in the league, you know, probably happened my junior year. We're playing against Notre Dame. I always tell the story. He's probably tired of me telling the story, but we were playing – well, going into the game, I knew they had Quentin Nelson and they had Mike McGlinchey. So all week they were talking about, you know, this is the most pro-ready offensive line you'll probably play in your career. So in my mind, I'm like, okay, I'm playing against an NFL offensive line this week. You know, and I finished the game, you know, like 10 tackles, a sack, an interception. And, you know, I felt like after that game, I just thought to myself, like, well, if this is considered the best in college, and I felt like, you know, not only did I have a great game, I felt like I could have played better. So it was just kind of like, all right, well, I feel like I compete on the highest level. And that was probably the turning point. But I would really say, you know, coming out for the draft, you know, again, no combine invite, no Senior Bowl invite. I didn't get an invite to any of those All-Star games. And I still did it. You know, and I think it was really my pro day that really got it done. And then once I got in the door in Indianapolis, they wasn't going to close it on me.
How do you get noticed at that point as a seventh round pick? Got a lot of studs on that defense. You got the maniac right by you. I've actually gotten together with him for a story back in my Bleacher Report days. He's wired different. Is it maybe you're feeding off each other? It seems like you have similar temperaments. But what? How in the hell did you become what you are today, where you're a mainstay on that defense from a guy that could have been easily cut in his first training camp?
I mean, honestly, for the first thing is, you know, Ray Allen talked to our team a couple years ago during COVID, and he said something that really hit me. And he was just basically saying, you know, be a superstar in your role, whatever role that may be. And, you know, I just think when I look back on it, you know, whether that was my first year when I was starting a little bit, rotating in on defense, to the next 2 years when I was mainly just special teams, to the past few years as I, you know, started to build a name for myself as a defensive player. I just think whatever role I had, I was just trying to be the best at, and you know, just trying to do whatever help the team win. I was willing to do everything and willing to be whoever I had to be to kind of keep it going. And at the end of the day, I always believed in myself. I always believed in the back of my mind, even when I was only playing special teams, even if when at a certain point it was like half the bus would have to get in a car accident, and then the coach got to be in a good mood just for me to play defense today. Like, even when that was a situation, I still believed in my mind, like, when I play, when I get my opportunity, I'm going to be one of the best linebackers in the league. I know who I am. I'm an every down linebacker. I can do these things. Watching Darius make so many plays and Kenny and, you know, those guys, it just motivated me and it made me believe in myself, because I understood at some point, whether one point or another, people viewed them like they weren't good enough to do what they're doing today. And even though my journey is a little later than theirs, I'm like, I know I was going to be able to accomplish what I wanted to accomplish.
Probably all rooted, right? And your grandmother, your mother, I mean, the way you grew up, it's you want them with you, obviously, but you're probably thanking them for just making you who you are, to get noticed, to fight and claw to get on a team, let alone start and star on a defense.
Yeah.
This year was pretty crazy, though. not what anybody was expecting. Gosh, I mean, Unique and Darius and Kenny, all these guys I've talked to over the years, this defense had the makings of something elite, special. You add a quarterback that you hope is going to be that missing piece. Jonathan Taylor, the NFL's best rusher. You guys are probably thinking Super Bowl. I mean Stephon Gilmore. Was that the expectation into this past season?
For sure. I mean, no question. But every team thinks they're going to win the Super Bowl. Even the team – that's the funny thing about it. Even the teams that, like – well, I can't say that, to be honest with you, because I think there's definitely a difference. You get a different feeling from management, from coaching staff, like when they feel like, yeah, we got a team. Like, we got a team that could do some shit. Like, you know what I mean? And I definitely felt like that was the feeling in the room and in our organization. And, you know, I just think it was one of those situations where death by a million cuts, man. You know, so many different things that stopped us from really taking that next step over the last 5 years, honestly. Just so many little things, just like a paper cut turns to a bullet wound. You know what I mean? It was just like one of those type of things. And, you know, we just wasn't strong enough to weather that storm. And it just kind of all broke down.
What was your reaction to the news that Jeff Saturday would be your head coach in the middle of the season?
Somebody, to be honest, I wasn't sure. To be honest, at first I wasn't sure how to react. Like, you know, I found out same as everybody else. I found out on my phone, you know, I found out, like, you know, and that's the craziest thing about it too. I was still, honestly, when Jeff was hired, I was still kind of reeling from Frank. I got a great relationship with Coach Reich. You know, he's a great man, and I understood that, you know, changes probably needed to be made at that point. But, you know, it was still disappointing that, you know, we weren't able to accomplish the goal that we kind of set out to accomplish. So at that point, to be honest with you, I was still kind of dealing with that. But, you know, when Jeff came in, I think he did a good job of just, you know, look, I'm here now. Let's just move forward. Let's kind of get going. I'm not like the guy that wasn't here. I'm not trying to be like anybody else. I'm just trying to be me. And I think he did a great job of just kind of trying to, at least trying to steal his own imprint or whatever it was.
Yeah, because it was pretty funky. I mean, you won a game nobody expected you to win, got big leads, then lost those big leads. What a roller coaster the rest of the season was.
I was telling people, I'm like, man, we're not even like quiet bad. Like, I feel like there's teams in the league that are bad that just you don't even think, you forget about them. I'm like, we're loud bad. Like, but it was just, I think, you know, I think it's a couple things. I just really feel like, one, it just shows you how small the margin of error really is in a league. Like, right. Like the difference between good and bad is really not as far as people really think. Like it's a little luck and a lot of preparation. And, you know, I think that's just the difference. And then for us, I really just felt like, man, like it's just, I can't walk away. I think we were a bad team in a sense of where we didn't have the general build and the foundation that it would take to go on a playoff run. Because we, like you said, adversity, you have to go through adverse things to be able to work through them and to achieve those things. Same thing all those playoff teams and all those great teams did this year. But just from a talent wise, we were extremely talented, extremely talented. Maybe, to be honest, might be the most, one of probably the most talented team that I've had since we've been here, maybe other than 2019 when Andrew retired. But I really felt like, but defensively, I mean, we had stars. We had guys everywhere. We had guys having career years, you know, everywhere. And it was just how we had it. But I just don't, and I think that just kind of comes to show you, it's not really about, like, yes, it's about talent. Everybody needs talent. You know what I mean? LA just overpowered their team with talent, right? But at the end of the day, it took, you know, guys that have been there that understood what it took to weather those storms. Aaron Donald, you know what I mean? Like, those tough guys, Matthew Stafford, a guy who had been through something, a veteran, a guy who had been through something, understood what it took to push through a moment. Because at the end of the day, talent going to be talent. So at that point, where you go from there, you know what I mean?
It has to be so strange on a personal level to have a career year. I mean, you almost had 200 tackles and, you know, forced fumbles, sacks, making plays, yet, just brutal losses. How do you... I mean, you got to take a moment to not celebrate, but like really know I'm becoming like a legit starter that's going to be in the NFL for a long time this season. Meanwhile, you know, you give up that lead against Minnesota, and it's just these losses are just eating away at you. I mean, mentally, that had to be kind of strange for you.
Man, it was one of those situations where it's just like, you know, you're devastated about how the team is going, and it sucks. It sucks because it's just like in the league, it's so crazy because it's like when you have a great performance without the win, it's just so empty. You know what I mean? And it's just like, man, like, you know, you get a win and with the great performance. Now you're getting player of the weeks. Now you're getting, you know, Pro Bowl votes and all kind of, like, now it's like, but when you lose, it's almost like you got to go into hiding for a week. You know what I mean? And for me, it was just kind of, you know, it was just like one of those situations where I was extremely happy and proud of myself. Cause like I said, I always felt like I was a guy in the league, and it was just like, man, you really proving it. You really doing it. And it felt good to feel what it feels like to change a game. You know what I mean? Like when I do something, when I'm making big plays and I'm like, man, I just shifted the game in our favor. You know what I mean? And that's a good feeling, knowing that you have that power, knowing that you have that capability, that type of playmaking ability. But it was disappointing to be losing. But at the end of the day, like I said, you know, tough times make you stronger. So it was just like, look, you know, at the end of it, it's just kind of like, look, we went through this. The season kind of was what it was. Look, let's learn from it. Let's move on. Let's bounce back. Let's keep it going.
I was going to say, I mean, we're talking here, it's still February. So maybe mentally you haven't like shifted into 2023. At some point though, you seem like a leader, a voice that could somehow get this team right and moving in the right direction, given your background, everything you've been through. How do you plan on, you know, being a voice to reset and turn this team into a winner?
Well, the first thing first comes with, you know, supporting our new coach, Coach Steichen. I mean, obviously, I got a tremendous amount of respect for him just because, I mean, he won that Philly game. You know, we had him, and they made a call that we didn't see coming, and an adjustment in the moment that it had, and it was really just a, you know, I sat down with the coaches afterwards, and we were just like, man, they skate. So, like, obviously, he's a great coach. Watching what he did in Philly,
yeah,
it's great. But for me personally, I really feel like just as a voice in the locker room is just understanding, like, look, like, yes, we had some good teams. We had some great times. You know what I mean? We had some big wins and some big losses over the course of my last 5 years. But we haven't accomplished anything. And, you know, through all those things, we didn't win anything. So at that point, that allows you to put everything, that every process that we had, every scenario that we had before, it allows you to put that in question, because regardless, that didn't get you the results that you wanted. You know what I mean? So now you have no choice but to embrace something new, embrace the change, embrace the different perspective, or embrace the new voice, embrace the new systems, because look, you know, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expect a different result. We weren't getting the results we wanted, so we had to make major shifts, major overhauls. That's how that's going to go. So just don't – look, life is about change. The league is about change. So the worst thing you could do is try to fight it. You might as well just get on the train. Let's run with it, because the faster all of us can get pulling in one direction, the faster we'll get this thing moving. So that's really just my whole mentality about the whole situation.
Almost like you have to have harsh conversations maybe amongst players. Like, yeah, I mean, sometimes you got to have some hard conversations if you want to bust through and get over the hump. This I feel like this team's been banging at the door for a while, but something is preventing from, you know, getting through.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, I know, Ballard and Mr. Irsay and, you know, everybody, they just really, I know that they've been wrapping their brains trying to figure out what that exactly missing piece is, what that thing is. And, you know, I know they're going to come up with an answer, and look, I'm a soldier, so I'm ready to ride out.
Well, it's a young quarterback, right? That's what that piece is. It's, I mean, I, in a vacuum, all of these signings have made sense. I can, you know, I was at some of these training camps, and you see Matt Ryan out there. He's the general. He's barking. He's getting guys all together. It seems like, okay, man, maybe he can squeeze one more year out of this career. And I mean, same Carson Wentz, Phillip Rivers. I don't think we're, you know, necessarily sharing nuclear codes here. And Indianapolis is probably going to draft a quarterback, go young. So GMZ, who are you taking there? Who are you going with? I'm sure you've been scouting.
Oh, man. I mean, listen, man, you ain't going to get me like that. But I like the Lynn QBs, though, man. I mean, I feel like, you know, Bryce obviously is a great player, you know, a winner. Like CJ as well. I mean, I ain't gonna lie, I just want a young dude that's gonna come in ready to work, ready to win, man. That's just about, you know, about greatness. You know what I mean? Not just about being, you know, lit or being, you know, popular or famous. I want somebody that's gonna come in and just ready to grind, ready to get after it. But like I said, I know they're gonna do their due diligence, get the guy that they need, but you know what I mean? I mean, maybe. I don't know, you know. But I will say, though, it's so funny because everybody always wants to kill us. And it's just like, I love that the media is so just – it's just that the memory gets erased. Because I remember when we first got Carson, everybody was just like, man, that was the move of the offseason, A-plus move. And, like, guess what? It didn't work out. You know, it didn't work out. And that's cool. It didn't work out. That's fine. But everything don't always go the way it's supposed to. But, like, don't kill us in the – in hindsight, like, that's corny, but it is what it is.
You're right. God, I remember writing a column saying this was the move, right? This was going to get the Colts over the hump.
It was, and Carson was a great guy, great teammate. It just wasn't in the cards. So,
you know, and I give the Colts credit for trying different things. You know, like you said, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing. But so you get all these different quarterbacks in. It's probably time to go young. So when you're looking for greatness, like, what are those signs of greatness that you'd want to see in a quarterback? What is that? What do you mean by that?
I mean, I think for me, it's just, you know, I think it's like I said before, like, I love competing. You know, I love, like, nothing makes me more, you can ask any of my teammates, I love when we get the chance to compete against Derrick Henry. You know, he's an all-time back. He's a great back. He's, you know, I want to compare myself versus the best. I want to compare myself versus the Saquons, versus the Dalvin Cooks, versus the Josh Jacobs. I want to go against those dudes. I want to beat those guys. Those are the guys because, in my opinion, that's what this game is all about, right? So, you know, in the AFC, understanding the battle in the gauntlet that you're jumping into. You know, Mahomes, Burrow, Allen, you know, Lamar Jackson, you know, those are the guys that you have to beat and be better than, like, no questions asked. So it's just like, that's what you want from not only just from your quarterback, from the rest of your team. And that's just across the board. Like, you want guys that just want to come in and you want them to be the best, like, train to be the best, expect to be the best, work to be the best. If you have that mentality and you got a team of that mentality, you ain't gonna, not gonna have top five players at every position, but that just because you're in the top five at your position don't mean you can't beat a guy. Like, you know what I'm saying? So it's just, that's really all it's about. So this is all about competition and where to work. So whatever, if we do get a young boy, whatever young guy we get in, we're going to check his temperature for sure. Like,
you're going to bring it to him in practice. You're going to give him some chin music.
Ready to every day, because that's what it's really about. So
that's great. I mean, you seem pretty jacked up, and it's February 22nd. You got a boxing workout in this morning. So you're already. I mean, what's that?
I got a little physical therapy today. That's gonna cool me out.
That's great, man. What about any big plans this off season? Anything else?
I got a fundraiser for my nonprofit, Shalisa's Angels. So I have a nonprofit. I named it after my mother, Shalisa's Angels. Really, just focus on, you know, helping young kids from, you know, underserved communities, with a special target on young women, just in a nod to my mother, my grandmother. So we got our first fundraiser coming up March 17th in Philadelphia. You know, where you can see it on my socials, on the Instagram, Shalisa's Angels, at Shalisa's Angels. So yeah, we got some stuff going up. But we also, you know, we do a bunch of cool things coming up. I got some cool things I can't wait to announce. We always take them on a trip. I always get a group of like 10 girls, take them to, like, you know, a really dope. So like a couple years ago, we took them to Google headquarters in New York City, and then took them from there to the Prudential Center in Jersey. Took them to the Sixers headquarters. They was able to meet, you know, the whole market and all that stuff, and walk on the basketball court and see all the guys. So we got some cool stuff coming up this year, man, and I'm looking forward to going to announce it pretty soon. But yeah, that's the first thing. So yeah,
man, well, spread the word. That's so cool. So just because you were raised by these, you know, incredibly strong women, you want to give back to like the next generation.
Of course. I feel like young women have played such a strong role in my life in raising me. And, you know, obviously I do work. I go to high schools and I go to schools. I pull up to football practices, and I'm obviously going to relate to the young men because I was them. I know exactly what they're going through, where they're from. We relate. I understand them. But, you know, I just think sometimes, you know, it's the young women that kind of need our help. And sometimes I feel like they're overlooked a little bit. And I just feel like, you know, my organization, just doing our best to kind of, you know, give that nod to them. And honestly, just in honor of my mother and my grandmother.
I forgot to ask too, do you have a relationship with your dad, and was he around?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, we have a relationship with him. You know, I, you know, grew up knowing him. He moved to Florida when I was like about third grade. And then he came back when I was in high school. So, but we, you know, remain in contact. You know, I still know him to this day. We not as close, but yeah, I definitely have a relationship with him.
Gotcha. Well, that's awesome what you're doing to give back. And you guys got some legit studs on that defense still. I mean, names just keep popping in my head. Gilmore didn't show any signs of slowing down last year. No, Stephon Well, he can play.
Big Grove had a career year. DeForest. I mean, we got guys. So it's just kind of like.
And everybody's sleeping on you, right? You guys are going to get mocked and forgotten and dismissed. It's a rebuilding team. That's finished. That's in transition.
Every season needs a hero. Every season needs a villain. And I'm cool playing either role, so I ain't worried about it.
Boy, anything else you want people to know before I lose you?
Man, just look. Follow me on Instagram, Zaire2_. Follow me on Twitter, Ziggy Smalls_. And just follow me on the journey. That's all I really can say.
Before I lose you though, you say you have a son. How old's your son?
He just turned one February 6th.
Oh my
Yeah, he just
God.
turned one. Yeah, little man over there. Yeah, he in another room going crazy right now, but yeah.
See,
That's
this
my
is we got a 3.5 and a 1.5 over my shoulder, and they're both out cold for their midday nap. When you can align the nap, that's huge.
I heard. Oh, I heard. I heard. Yeah, I came home and he was napping, but I hear him running around back there. So I got
Is it
we
good? How do you like fatherhood? How's it going for you?
man, it's a blessing. It's great, man. People don't understand how much a little 1 year-old will wear you out though. Like you'll just be hanging around with him and he just burning you out. They so crazy. They quick to get in the whole kind of things. They just but it's lovely, man. I don't know. That's like my heart, man. Just little dude, he just I don't know. He just inspired me, bro. That's my little dude. We be up watching Mickey Mouse and all that. That's my guy.
That's great. Oh yeah, once you get past that threshold, it's climbing on anything that is near, and it's yeah, your head's on a swivel. Your head's on a swivel in the middle of that Colts defense, but especially at home now.
No question. Got to.